idea what that means, right? Basically, I start with realistic scenes as a base, but mostly I follow the brush, adding vibrant colors or geometric shapes or random splatters and swirls and drips until I feel that it's done. Of course, the painting is never really done. I have pieces I've been tinkering with for years because they're just not right. The problem is I'm not always sure how to make them right. Sounds very artsy, I grinned. She laughed, the sound exactly what I remembered. As long as it would look good hanging on most people's walls and makes a person think, I'm pleased with the result. Oh, just that? That's what the gallery owner likes to say when he's trying to sell one of my pieces. So, yes. I'd love to see your work. You can stop by the gallery any time, she said. She gave me the name and I committed it to memory. How's Marge doing? I always wanted a big sister like her. She's doing well, still with Liz, of course. The same Liz I met when we were dating? Yeah, they've been together ever since, almost 11 years now. Wow, she said. Good for them. What's Liz like? Kind and thoughtful and supportive. I have no idea what she sees in Marge. There was a glimmer of reproach in Emily's expression. Be nice. You know I'm kidding. They're a great couple. I'm not sure I've ever seen them argue. They just sort of go with the flow. That's a good thing. And your parents? Are they still working? Mom retired, but Dad's still at it full time. Still working on his car? Every weekend. And your mom? She's now a member of the Red Hat Society, and she wants to plant tulips. When Emily furrowed her brow, I told her about the week before. You know, you can't be mad at her for that. She already fulfilled her parenting duties. That's what Marge said. Marge wouldn't help me either. And yet, you got everything done anyway. Marge said that too. She let out a long breath. It's amazing where life has taken us, huh? Since we knew each other? Of course, we were just kids back then. We weren't kids. She smiled. Are you kidding? Maybe technically we were old enough to vote, but I can definitely remember some youthful exuberance on your part. Like the time you decided to see whether you could eat that monstrous steak so you could get your picture on the wall of the restaurant. How big was that steak again? The memory came back in a rush. We'd been out at the lake with a group of friends, and I spotted the restaurant sign just off the highway, advertising that in addition to my photo on the wall, there would be no charge for the meal. 75 ounces. You didn't even make it halfway. I was hungry when I started. You were also drunk. Maybe a little. Good times, she laughed. She lingered before me before finally gesturing toward my computer. But unfortunately, I should probably get going. You need to work, and I've really got to get that stuff shipped off today. I became aware of the fact that I didn't want her to go, even if it was probably a good idea. You're probably right. She stood from the table.
It was nice seeing you again, Russ.
You too, I said. It's been fun catching up.
I'll see you later.
Later?
When the class ends?
Of course, I said. I knew that. Using her shoulder to push open the door, I couldn't help but notice that she glanced back at me and smiled, before finally vanishing from sight. I spent the next hour in the coffee shop researching on the internet and was able to find two commercials for the law offices of Joey Taglieri, one of which was no longer airing. They were professional, informative, and I had to admit, nearly the same as the kind of legal commercials I used to film. I also watched commercials from almost a dozen other law firms in town, concluding that, if anything, Taglieri's commercials were no better or worse than any of the others. Why, then, had Joey Taglieri thought of them as idiots? If the commercials weren't that bad, however, I still didn't think Taglieri was getting his money's worth when it came to the overall campaign. His website was distinctly out of date and lacked pizzazz, and a phone call to a buddy let me know there was nothing going on in the way of internet advertising. Another couple of calls let me know that he didn't advertise in print or on billboards either. I wondered if he'd be open to those ideas, while doing my best not to get too excited. A call to my office helped. There was Zippo, nada, zilch in the way of messages, and after leaving the coffee shop, I collected London from art class. She proudly pointed out a bowl she'd made, and I waved at Emily on my way out the door. She smiled and raised a hand. She was talking to the teacher at the time, and after bringing London home, I was unsure how best to spend the next few hours until dance class. It was too hot to bring London outside, and her day was already so full.
I suspected that she might simply want to relax and play for a while. In the end, I decided to make Vivian dinner. I perused a few cookbooks, recognizing that many of the recipes were beyond my culinary capabilities. There was, however, a recipe for Chilean sea bass, and a quick search of the cupboards indicated I had most of the ingredients. Perfect. I brought London to dance, and while the class was no doubt disappointing the grim Miss Hamshaw, I swung by the grocery store and picked up the rest. Dinner was well underway by the time Vivian walked through the door. With rice pilaf and green bean almondine going on the stove, I couldn't step away. "I'm in the kitchen," I called out, and soon afterward I heard Vivian's footsteps behind me. "Wow," she noted, walking toward me. "It smells great in here. What are you making?" When I told her, she leaned over the pots on the stove. "What's the occasion?" "No occasion. Just thought I'd try something new. And after dinner, I figured that I'd get the bike out so you could watch London ride." She opened the cupboard and pulled a glass from the cupboard, then the wine from the fridge. "Let's do it tomorrow, okay? I'm tired, and London's had a big day. She seems wiped out already." "Fair enough," I said. She poured herself a glass. "How did she do at tennis?" "About the same as everyone else. First day, learning to hold the racket at the proper end, all the basics. There were a couple of girls from the neighborhood, so she seemed happy to be there."
"I think tennis will be good for her. It's a great sport to socialize."
"And the girls look cute in those shorts, I might add."
"Ha ha. How about art class and dance?"
"She had fun at art, but as for dance, I still don't think she likes it very much."
"Give it time. Once she starts competing, she'll love it."
I wondered who Vivian imagined would be bringing her to the competitions, but kept my thoughts to myself. "Were you able to get a workout in?"
"I squeezed it in at lunch," she answered. "A pretty good one, in fact. I felt great the rest of the afternoon."
"Good for you," I said. "And how was your day?"
"Nothing like last week, that's for sure. Things were a lot calmer in the office. For a few minutes there, I felt like I had time to actually settle in at my desk and take a breath."
I smiled. "My day was pretty interesting."
"Yeah?
Have you ever heard of a guy named Joey Taglieri?" She frowned.
"You mean the attorney?"
"That's him."
"I've seen his commercials. They run in the mornings."
"What do you think about them?"
"About what?"
"The commercials."
"I don't really remember much about them. Why?"
I told her what we talked about and my thoughts in the aftermath.
"Are you sure you want to do that?"
she asked, sounding skeptical. "What do you mean?"
"Don't you think that's kind of lowbrow? Lawyer commercials? Didn't Peters stop taking on attorneys because other clients didn't approve?"
"Yeah, but it's not as though I've got any other clients to worry about. I just want to get something going, you know? And he clearly spends a lot on advertising." She nodded and took a sip of her wine.
"Yeah, okay, if that's what you think is best."
Not exactly a ringing endorsement, but because she seemed to be in a better mood than she had been lately, I cleared my throat. "Have you found a daycare center for London yet?"
"When have I had the chance?"
"Would you like me to start getting some recommendations?"
"No," she said, sounding put out. "I'll do it. It's just..."
"Just what?"
"Do we really have to sign her up now? She'd have to give up piano and tennis and art, and you've been able to get her everywhere she needs to be so far."
"They have activities at daycare."
"I'm just saying that with her being so upset on Saturday night, I'm not sure it's such a good idea. School's going to be starting in a few weeks anyway."
"It's not a few weeks," I said, doing a quick calculation. "It's 5 more weeks.
"And this is about our daughter. What's best for her? Once school starts, you'll have plenty of time to concentrate on your business. Just keep doing what you're doing, and when you have a meeting, drop her off at your mom's house."
"My mom can't watch London every day. She told me she has other things to do."
"She said that? Why didn't you tell me?"
"Because you pretty much ignored me all week, nor did you ask about my work at all."
"This isn't about my mom, Vivian. I was trying to talk to you about daycare." "I hear you. I get it. You think ditching your daughter with a bunch of strangers is a good idea so you can be free to do what you want instead."
"I didn't say that."
"You didn't have to. It amounts to the same thing. You're being selfish."
"I'm not being selfish."
"Of course you are. She's our daughter. She's struggling."
"One time," I said, "she had a temper tantrum because you were out of town."
"No. She was upset because her entire world has changed, and now you want to make it even worse. I can't understand why you think it's such a great idea to dump her. Don't you like spending time with her?"
I felt my jaw clench and I exhaled slowly, trying to keep my voice steady.
Of course I do, but you said I would have to watch her for a week, two at the most.
What I also said was that I wanted to do what's best for our daughter. I haven't had the time to find the right place, and now, by the time I do find it and get her signed up, school will be about to start, and what would be the point?
She'll still need a place to go after school lets out, I said.
I'll talk to London about it, okay?
You'll talk to London about daycare?
I assume that you haven't. I have no idea how she'd feel about it.
She's 5 years old, I said. She doesn't know enough to know what to think about daycare.
Mommy, I'm hungry.
I turned and saw London in the doorway of the kitchen. Vivian glared at me, and I knew we were both wondering how much she'd heard.
Hey, sweetheart, Vivian said, immediately lightening her tone. Dinner will be ready in a few minutes. Want to help me set the table?
Okay,
London said, and Vivian moved to the cupboard. She and London set the table. I served and brought the food over. After London had taken a few bites, she smiled at me.
Dinner is really good, Daddy.
Thanks, sweetheart, I said, feeling my heart warm just a little. My marriage with Vivian might be a little shaky at the present, and my business going nowhere fast, but at least, I thought to myself, I was learning how to cook. It didn't make me feel any better. Chapter 10. Moving Forward. When I was a kid, summers were the most glorious time of life. Because my parents believed in hands-off, free-range parenting, I'd usually be out the door before 10 and wouldn't return until dinner. There were no cell phones to keep track of me, and whenever my mom called a neighbor to ask where I was, the neighbor was often just as clueless as to her own child's whereabouts. In fact, there was only one rule as far as I could tell. I had to be home at 5:30, since my parents liked to eat dinner as a family. I can't remember exactly how I used to spend those days. I have recollections in snapshot form, building forts or playing King of the Hill on the high part of the jungle gym, or chasing after a soccer ball while attempting to score. I remember playing in the woods, too. Back then, our home was surrounded by undeveloped land, and my friends and I would have dirt-clod wars or play capture the flag. When we got BB guns, we would spend hours shooting cans and occasionally shooting at each other. I spent hours exploring on my bicycle, and whole weeks would pass where I'd wake every morning with nothing scheduled at all. Of course, there were kids in the neighborhood who didn't lead that sort of carefree existence. They would head off to camp or participate in summer leagues for various sports, but back then, kids like that were the minority. These days, kids are scheduled from morning to night, and London was no exception because parents demanded it. But how did it happen? And why? What changed the outlook of parents in my generation? Peer pressure? Living vicariously through a child's success? Resume building for college? Or was it simply fear that if their kids were allowed to discover the world on their own, nothing good would come of it? I don't know. I am, however, of the opinion that something has been lost in the process. The simple joy of waking in the morning and having nothing whatsoever to do. What's the problem with the commercials? Joey Taglieri asked, repeating my question to him. It was Tuesday morning, tennis lesson number 2. Still angry at me from the night before, Vivian had left that morning without speaking to me. The problem is they're boring, he said. It's just me talking to the camera in an overstuffed office. Hell, I fall asleep watching them, and they cost me a fortune. How would you make them different? When I was a kid, my family lived in Southern California for a few years when my dad was still in the Marines. Hated it there, by the way. So did my mom. As soon as he retired, my family moved back to New Jersey. Both my parents were from there. You ever been to New Jersey? I think I flew out of Newark a couple of times. That doesn't count. And don't believe all that crap you see on reality TV about Jersey either. It's a great place. I'd raise my daughter there if I could. But her mom's here, and even if she's a cold-hearted shrew, she's pretty good as a mom. But anyway, back to Southern California. There was this car dealer named Cal Worthington. Ever heard of him? Can't say that I have. Old Cal Worthington had the greatest commercials of all time. Every commercial would introduce him and his dog Spot, except that Spot was anything but a dog. Spot might be a monkey or a lion or elephant or whatever. There was even a killer whale once. Old Cal had a snappy little jingle that was impossible to forget, with a refrain that went, "Go see Cal, go see Cal, go see Cal." Hell, I was 8 years old and didn't give a crap about cars, and I wanted to go to the dealership just to meet the guy and maybe see a few exotic animals.
That's the kind of commercial I want.
You want elephants in your commercials? And killer whales?
Of course not, but I do want something that people remember, something that makes some injured guy in a Barca lounge just sit up and say to himself, I gotta see that guy. I want him to represent me.
The problem is that legal commercials are regulated by the bar.
Don't you think I know that?
I also know that North Carolina generally falls on the advertising is free speech side when it comes to regulations. If you're in advertising, you should know that too. I do, I said. But there's a difference between coming across as a professional and competent attorney that you can trust and a low-class ambulance chaser.
That's exactly what I said to the idiots who made the commercial. And still, they came back with something that's best described as, let's put the viewers into a coma.
Have you even seen them?
Of course I have.
And actually, they're not that bad.
Yeah? What's the office number then?
Excuse me?
The office phone number. It's there on the screen the whole time. If the commercials were so great, what's the number?
I don't know.
Bingo. And that's the problem.
They probably remember your name.
Yeah, and that's another problem. Taglieri isn't exactly the most southern of names, you know? And that might turn some people off.
There's not much you can do about your name.
Don't get me wrong. I'm proud of my family name. I'm just noting another problem I have with the commercials. There's too much of my name and not enough of the phone number.
Gotcha, I said. What do you think about other forms of advertising, like billboards, websites, internet ads, radio ads?
I don't know, he said. I haven't much thought about it. I only have so much money to spend.
That makes sense, I said, suspecting that any more questions would do more harm than good. On the court, I watched London trying to volley with another girl, but there was more chasing after tennis balls than actual volleys.
What does your wife do? Joey asked into the silence.
She works in PR, I said. She just started a new job for one of the big developers around here. None of my wives worked. Of course, I worked too much. Opposites attract and all that. Did I mention that you should always have a prenup?
Yes.
It allows for none of the financial torture that those of the fairer sex like to inflict. You sound jaded.
On the contrary, I love women.
Would you ever get married again?
Of course. I'm a big believer in marriage.
Really? What can I tell you? I'm a romantic.
So what happened?
I tend to fall in love with the crazy ones. That's what happened.
I laughed. I'm glad I don't have that problem.
You think so? She's still a woman.
And?
I had the sense Joey was trying to read me.
Hey,
he finally said,
as long as you're happy, then I'm happy for you.
On Wednesday night after dance class, London was predictably glum as she crawled into the car. Tonight, since Mom's away, how about we have pizza for dinner?
Pizza isn't good for you.
As long as you don't eat it all the time, it's fine. When was the last time you had pizza? She thought about it.
I can't remember. When is Mommy getting home again?
She'll be home tomorrow, sweetie.
Can we call her?
I don't know if she's busy, but I'll send a text, okay?
Okay,
she said. In the back seat, she seemed smaller than usual. How about we go out for pizza anyway, just you and me? And after that, we'll stop and get ice cream. Though she didn't say yes, she didn't say no either, and we ended up at a place that made a decent thin crust pizza. While we were waiting, Vivian called using FaceTime, and after that, London's mood began to lift. By the time we hit Dairy Queen, she was chatting away happily. She spent most of the ride home talking about her friend Bodie and his dog Noodle, and how he'd invited her over to his house so he could show her his lightsaber. My first thought was that my daughter was far too young to be shown any boy's lightsaber. The next thought, which came an instant later, was that it was likely one of the playdates that Marge had suggested I set up, and that the lightsaber wasn't a metaphor, but an actual play sword inspired by the Star Wars movies. When we got home, London ran up the stairs to see Mr. and Mrs. Sprinkles, and though I expected her to stay up there for a while, she appeared in the living room a few minutes later.
Daddy?
Yes, sweetheart?
Can we go bike riding again?
I stifled a groan. I was tired and wanted nothing more than to stay glued to the couch. Of course we can, I said instead. And as I stood, I suddenly remembered that Vivian had said that she'd wanted to watch London ride her bike the night before. But she must have forgotten. Right? London made three turns on her own. Wobbly, but she was able to regain her balance. And even during the other turns, I had to help less than I'd had to before. On the straightaways, I'd barely touched her bicycle at all. Because she was growing more confident, she rode faster, and by the end of our session, I was panting and sweating,
my shirt soaked through. "How about you take a bath upstairs while I take a shower downstairs?" I suggested. I wasn't sure what to expect. The last time Vivian was out of town hadn't gone so well. Tonight she simply nodded. "Okay, Daddy." I cleaned up, and by the time I reached her room, London was sitting on the bed in her pajamas, the brush and bottle of detangling spray beside her. After the detangler worked its magic and I was finished with her hair, I propped myself against the headboard. I read 2x2, along with a few other books. I kissed London goodnight, and as I was about to turn out the light, I heard her voice again.
"Daddy?"
"Yes?"
"What's daycare? I heard you and Mommy talking about it."
"Daycare is a place where kids go when their moms and dads work, so that grown-ups can make sure you stay safe."
"Like a house?"
"Sometimes. But other times it's in a building. They have toys and games and activities, and lots of kids really like it because there's always something fun to do."
"But I like being with you and Mommy."
"I know you do, and we like being with you too."
"Mommy doesn't. Not anymore."
"Of course she does.
She loves you very much. She just has to work." "Why does she have to work?"
"Because we need money to live. Without money, we couldn't buy food or clothes or toys, or even Mr. and Mrs. Sprinkles." She seemed to think about that.
"If I give them back to the pet store, can Mommy stop working?"
"No, sweetheart. It doesn't work that way." I hesitated.
"Are you okay, sweetie? You seem kind of sad." "Mommy's gone again. I don't like it when she's gone."
"I know you don't, and I know she'd rather be here with you, too."
"When you were working, you always came home."
"Our jobs are different. She sometimes has to work in different cities."
"I don't like it."
"I don't either," I thought. But there wasn't much I could do about it. Changing the subject, I put my arm around her. "You were so great riding your bike today."
"I was going super fast."
"Yes, you were."
"You could barely keep up."
"Daddy could use more regular exercise, but I'm glad you enjoy it."
"It's fun going fast."
"Is it more fun than piano lessons?" I asked, wiggling her slightly as I said the final two words. She giggled.
"Yes."
"Is it more fun than tennis?"
"Yes."
"Is it more fun than dance?"
"Yes."
"Is it more fun than art?"
"Yes," she giggled, "but it's not more fun than Bodhi."
"Bodhi! Biking is way more fun than Bodhi."
"No, it isn't. Bodhi's way more fun."
"No, no, no."
"Yes, yes, yes," she giggled, "and I want to go to his house."
By then I was giggling too. "Oh no," I said. "I think you're way too little to go over to Bodhi's house."
"No, I'm not. I'm big."
"I don't know."
"Yes, yes, yes. I'm big enough to go to Bodhi's house."
"Okay," I said. "I guess I can ask his mom about that." She beamed before putting her arms around my neck.
"I love you, Daddy."
"I love you too, baby girl."
"I'm not a baby."
I squeezed her tight. "You'll always be my baby." After turning out her lights and thinking I'd reached the point where I couldn't keep up with London any longer, I went to the garage and rolled my bicycle out. I'd had it for years, and like London's had been, it was more neglected than damaged. I cleaned and oiled it, added WD-40 to the sprockets, and filled the tires before giving it a test ride. Good enough, I thought, and heading inside, I perched my computer on the kitchen table. Pulling up YouTube, I watched a dozen different Cal Worthington commercials, thinking Taglieri had been right. The jingle was snappy, and old Cal always had his dog Spot, which was always an exotic animal. The spots were memorable, but the whole thing came across as hucksterism at its finest. It's no wonder a kid would want to meet the car dealer, but I wasn't so sure that it would inspire the confidence necessary to land clients as an attorney. I watched Taglieri's commercials again. Afterward, I jotted the number on a pad of paper and matched the numbers to the letters, wondering if I could come up with a word or two to make the phone number more memorable. Nothing leapt immediately to mind with the number he had. But if he had added a second toll-free number, there might be something I could do. I thought first of simply spelling his last name, but there were 8 letters and 7 numbers, so that wouldn't work, even if people could remember how to spell Taglieri, which was doubtful. I might be able to do something like, "Win for you," or "Tag is it," or maybe even "Bulldog." but none of those seemed exactly right. I hoped something better would come to me. While I knew Taglieri's business would benefit from other forms of advertising, I focused first on the commercials because I knew it was a language he'd understand. How then to make them better and different enough to entice him to make the switch? I spent the next couple of hours jotting down various ideas until they began to solidify. Ditch the office in the suit. Instead, let's show Taglieri outside the courthouse in a sweater, looking neighborly like someone who really cares. Similar script, but more familiar and casual in mood and tone. Definitely different, but then again, I wasn't sure it was quite up to the level of Cal Worthington either. Maybe it was because I was tired, but even as I continued to tinker with various slogans and ideas for images, my mind kept wandering to the ludicrous. You wanted raw hucksterism? How about you dress up in a superhero outfit and crash through doors to take on the evil insurance executives? Or how about I drape you in an American flag with images of bald eagles to show how trustworthy you are? Or maybe I'll have you do cool things, like break through blocks of wood like a karate expert to show how you're ready to do whatever it takes to win. As the images rolled through my mind, I found myself occasionally laughing, even if I couldn't imagine ever using them. Creativity and originality were fine, but people who were injured didn't want slapstick. They wanted experience and tenacity and trust. And I was struck by the notion that instead of trying to do all of that in a single commercial, it might be possible to capture those ideas individually in a series of commercials. To me, it seemed right, and I felt my heart thump in my chest. I wondered if Taglieri would be interested in something like that, and if I could persuade him to sit down for a pitch, I knew I'd need to lay out the idea for at least two or three commercials. The first would be reminiscent of what he was doing now, but the second and third ones? They had to be different, and while one would be short, the other should feel like a special event, the kind of commercial that would only run every now and then, the kind that almost tells a story. I could feel the gears turning, the beginning of an idea, and I continued to develop it over the next couple of hours, bits and pieces coming together. As to the third commercial, a short one using humor and focusing on a single theme, the idea leapt to mind just as I was shutting down the computer. Like magic, I was struck with yet another idea a few minutes after that, the creativity beginning to flow. Feeling good about myself, I turned out the lights an hour later, and though it took a while for me to fall asleep, once I was out, I slept better than I had in weeks.
So you're saying that you want to take your pitch on a test drive, and I'm the sucker you've chosen?
It was Thursday morning. Joey had dressed down today to shorts and t-shirt just like me. And still he was sweating through his shirt. I wouldn't phrase it that way.
You know I'm a busy man, right? I don't know if I can handle any more business.
That was a new reason for rejection, and I wasn't sure what to say. He must have seen my expression because he laughed.
I'm kidding. I gotta get as many people as I can to walk into my office so I can find those nuggets that actually pay the bills. I've got three associates and three paralegals, and that means the bills are high. My specific area of law has become a volume business these days, even if it means sifting through all the nut jobs for a surefire winner. I need people calling the office and walking through that door.
That's why I'm talking to you. I can help.
How long would it take you to put something together?
I've already got some general ideas, I admitted. It wouldn't take long at all to finalize everything. He looked me over.
All right. Monday afternoon, 1 o'clock, I'm in court the rest of the week and the week after that.
I couldn't fathom waiting that long, even if it meant that I'd be buried in work the next 3 days.
1 o'clock it is, I agreed. Just remember, though.
What's that?
Don't waste my time. I hate when people waste my time.
That afternoon, knowing the presentation had to be as informative as possible with far more specific detail than the ones I'd done last week, I went to work. Though I was going to present a plan that offered a broad campaign in a variety of media, I started with the commercials because it seemed to be Taglieri's main area of interest. My first step was to start with the script, and after the first drafts were complete, I began to cut and paste together generic images I pulled from the internet, so Taglieri would be able to follow the flow of the commercials in the way I imagined. While I worked, London was content to play with her Barbies, but I worked from the kitchen table so I could keep an eye on her. Vivian rolled in a little past 5. I gave her a quick rehash of my day before she spent some time with London and made dinner. It was only after I got London in bed that Vivian and I were able to get some alone time. I found her on the couch, flipping through a magazine, a nearly empty glass of wine on the end table beside her.
Did she go down okay?
She was tired, only a couple of books tonight.
How's your work going?
There's a way to go, but I'll get it done.
I noticed when I pulled in that you fixed up your bicycle.
I want to be able to ride with London.
She said that the two of you went riding again.
She rode. I ran and almost died. Hence the repairs on my bike. She's getting pretty good. I can't keep up with her anymore.
She's got a lot of energy.
Yes, she does. She turned a page.
I was able to make some calls to daycares while I was out of town.
Really? I asked, feeling a mixture of astonishment and relief, along with a stab of guilt I hadn't expected. Our previous discussion of the matter had led me to believe she'd never call at all. When did you have the time? She nodded.
When Walter was meeting with Senator Thurman. But it was just a preliminary call. I didn't schedule any appointments, though, because I wasn't sure about my travel schedule next week.
You're traveling next week, too?
I think so, but I'm not sure what days yet.
When do you think you'll find out?
I'm hoping by tomorrow, but who knows? I'll let you know as soon as I know.
I didn't know how Spanerman could believe that scheduling last-minute overnights was fair to employees, but then again, my experience of him told me that he probably didn't care. What did the daycares say?
I didn't speak to them very long. I just wanted a sense of some of the activities they offer, how many kids are there, things like that.
Did you feel comfortable with them?
They seemed okay. The people I talked to were conscientious, but even they told me that we couldn't get a real sense of the places unless we actually visited.
Makes sense, I said. How was your trip, by the way?
Productive. In addition to the senator, Spanerman met with two different representatives and our lobbyist. Now that the PAC has more funding, it's a lot easier to meet with the people we need to.
That's not a surprise. She shrugged.
So you had pizza last night, huh? And ice cream?
I figured she'd enjoy it. She wasn't in the best mood after dance.
She'll like it more once she starts competing. That's when I started to like it.
You used to dance?
I've told you that before.
Not that I could remember. How long did you dance? She continued to flip through the magazine.
I don't know, 2 or 3 years. What does it matter?
It doesn't. I was just making conversation.
It's not a big deal. My teacher was nowhere near as good as London's. I wish she would have been. I probably would have kept at it longer.
She reached for her glass.
Would you mind getting me another half a glass of wine? I'm exhausted and I really want to be able to sleep tonight, especially since I promised to make up for our date night.
Yeah, I said, glad she remembered.
Sure.
I rose from the couch and went to the kitchen, returning with a half a glass. By the time I got there, Vivian had turned the television to a reality show, and though we sat together for another hour, she retreated into silence, content to watch her show and flip through the magazine, as if I wasn't there at all. Friday morning, as soon as I woke, my thoughts flashed to the presentation. I was out of bed minutes later, and as I'd done the day before, I worked from the kitchen table until it was time to head to art class. While London was painting, I parked myself at the coffee shop, and lost in thought, I didn't notice the passage of time. The next thing I knew, London's class was over. Oops. I gathered my things and walked quickly to the studio, feeling relief when I spotted London and Bodhi in the corner, heads together. I was about to call out to her when I saw Emily watching me with an amused expression.
Hi, Russ.
Oh, hey, Emily. You're still here?
She smiled, looking relaxed. I saw you in the coffee shop a few minutes ago, and you looked pretty intense with whatever you were working on. When you didn't show up, I thought I'd wait until you got here to make sure London was okay.
You didn't have to do that, I said.
No worries. Believe me, my son was thrilled that you're late.
Where is he?
My son?
She motioned in London's direction.
He's talking with your daughter. I suppose I should have seen the resemblance.
Now that I knew, I could see it clearly. Bodhi's your son?
Small world, huh?
As we watched them, she went on.
They're so cute at this age, aren't they? They're just so innocent, you know?
I was thinking the same thing.
No hamsters today?
Was I supposed to bring them? She laughed. Not that I know about, but Bodhi loves Mr. and Mrs. Sprinkles. Ever since she brought them, he's been asking me if we could get some hamsters, too. Sorry. If it makes you feel any better, London wants to play with Noodle. And see Bodhi's lightsaber.
Don't get me started on the lightsaber. Bodhi brings that thing everywhere. He started to cry when I wouldn't let him bring it into church last weekend. How's your work coming?
It's going well. I'm hoping to finish this weekend.
How's your painting?
It's been hard to get back into the rhythm. Tough couple of years, I guess.
Makes sense, I agreed. I haven't been able to swing by the gallery to see your work yet.
I didn't expect you to. I'm guessing that between work and London, you're on the go pretty much every day.
London's schedule is packed. Dance, piano, art, and now tennis? When she saw my expression, she went on.
What can I tell you? Bodhi talks about her all the time. He wants a playdate.
So does London, but frankly, I'm not even sure how to go about setting up something like that. I sensed her amusement.
It's not that complicated, Russ, she said. We talk about it, as in, what's your schedule like? Do you have any time on Monday afternoon? Can London come over?
As soon as she said it, I knew it would be perfect. But when I didn't answer, she went on.
Do you have something else planned?
No, I answered. It's not that. Actually, I'm supposed to have a presentation at 1 o'clock.
Then it's perfect. I can pick her up here and bring her to the house.
I'll feed her lunch and let the two of them hang out until you come by to get her.
Isn't that almost like babysitting,
since I'll be off working?
That's called a happy coincidence. Let's plan on it, okay?
Are you sure? It feels like I'm taking advantage of you.
She laughed. You haven't changed much, have you?
What do you mean?
You worry too much about things you shouldn't. You don't think that if I had something to do, I wouldn't find someone to watch Bodhi?
Thank you, I said. That'll help me out a lot.
I'm happy to do it, and Bodhi will be thrilled.
Of course, he's going to be super excited all weekend, so I'll have to deal with that.
And speak of the devil, here they come.
I watched the two of them scampering toward us.
Mom? Bodhi asked. Can we go to Chick-fil-A for lunch?
Sure,
Emily answered. I felt London tug on my sleeve.
Daddy, can we go too?
You want to go to Chick-fil-A?
Please,
she pleaded. I sensed Emily waiting for an answer, but I couldn't tell whether she was happy or bothered by the idea that I might join them.
Yeah, I said. We can go.
Chick-fil-A was bustling. London and Bodhi ran off toward the climbing play area while Emily and I made small talk in line. After picking up our order, we called the kids over and they wolfed down their food before rushing back to the climbing area.
I like coming here because it helps Bodhi get some of his energy out. He's been a little rambunctious ever since his dad left. His dad isn't around much, and it's been hard on him.
I'm sorry to hear that, I said.
It is what it is. There's not much I can do about it.
Is there a way to talk your ex into spending more time with him?
I don't see how. He moved back to Australia last April.
Of course, he's coming in the week after next, and he'll be in town until the third or fourth week of September. Some big project or whatever, and he said he'd like to see Bodhi as much as possible.
Which is great, but it'll throw Bodhi's schedule out of whack until then. And after that, I have no idea when he'll be back. I have no idea how Bodhi's going to handle his dad leaving again.
She shook her head.
I'm sorry. I swore to myself that I wasn't going to be one of those women who talk nonstop about their ex.
Sometimes it's hard not to, especially when it comes to kids.
I know you're right, but it still gets boring. Hell, I get bored hearing myself talk about it.
She folded her hands on the table in front of her.
So how about you tell me exactly what you're working on? You were completely zoned in when I saw you.
It's a presentation for a prospective client, an attorney, and it's kind of a big deal for me. My business hasn't exactly taken off the way I wanted it to.
I'm sure he'll love your ideas.
How would you know that?
Because you're smart and creative. You always were. They're your gifts.
I always thought you were the creative one.
That's why we got along as well as we did.
She shrugged.
Well, until the end, anyway.
How does this painting thing work?
You mean as a profession, or how did I get started?
Both. I knew you were passionate about painting, but you told me you thought you'd end up getting your master's and teaching somewhere.
I just got lucky. After you and I broke up, I went a little crazy there for a while, and all I did was paint. I took all the hurt and angst I was feeling and somehow got it down on various canvases. By the end, they were stacked in my parents' garage, and I had no idea what to do with all of them. I wasn't even sure any of the paintings were any good. A little while after that, I met David and life moved forward, and eventually I heard about this Festival of the Arts in Greensboro. I decided on a whim to rent a booth, and even before I finished setting everything up, I met a gallery owner. He examined all my work and agreed on the spot to bring in some of my work. Within a month, it had sold out.
That's amazing, I said.
Like I said, I was lucky.
It's more than luck. But it makes me feel bad.
Why?
Because I was the cause of all that hurt and angst. What I did to you is still one of my biggest regrets, and I'm sorry.
You already apologized for that a long time ago, she responded.
I know, but still.
Guilt is a wasted emotion, Russ. That's what my mom tells me anyway. Besides, I could have probably handled it better, too.
You handled it fine.
If you say so.
What I can say is that my career wouldn't be where it is without that experience, and my marriage wouldn't have lasted as long as it did either.
Let's just say I had to learn to forgive.
David had an affair?
Not just one. Many.
Why did you stay? She nodded toward Bodie.
Because of him. David may have been a terrible husband, but he was also Bodie's hero. Still is, I'm sure.
She paused before she shook her head.
And there I go again, talking about my ex again.
It's all right. She was quiet for a moment.
You know what the hardest thing is about being divorced? It's like I'm not even sure what it means to be a single, independent adult. I pretty much went from you to David, and now here I am, with no idea what I'm supposed to be doing.
Between work and Bodie, it's not like I have time to hang out in bars or go to parties. And frankly, that's never been my style anyway. It's just that... I could see a trace of sadness in her expression, as she searched for the right words.
It isn't the life I ever imagined. Half the time I feel like a stranger in my own skin.
I can't imagine what it would be like to be single.
I don't like it. But believe me, the other option is sometimes even worse.
I nodded, unsure what to say. In time, she sighed and went on.
I'm just glad I'm able to work from home. Otherwise, it would have been harder on Bodie than it already is.
He seems like a happy child to me.
Most of the time, he is. But every now and then, he melts down.
I think that's true of every child. Even London can throw a mean temper tantrum.
Yeah?
I told her about the previous weekend. When I finished, Emily wore an uncertain expression.
Wait a minute. When Vivian got home, she didn't take London to the blueberry farm? She asked.
She said it was too hot, so they went to the mall instead. London didn't seem to mind. I think she was happy because her mom was home. She's still getting used to the idea that Vivian is working while I take care of her. From what I can tell, you're doing a good job with her. I'm not so sure. Half the time I feel like I'm faking it.
So do I. That's normal.
Really?
Of course. I love Bodie, but it's not like I wake up excited about bringing him to the dentist, or helping him clean his room, or run him here and there. That's normal. It's the stuff of parenting.
I still feel like I'm not doing enough. Yesterday and this morning, I worked and pretty much left her on her own. I mean, I was there and kept an eye on her, but it's not like I spent meaningful time with her.
Don't be so hard on yourself. I'm sure she was fine. And you'll get better at the whole balance between work and parenting thing. Look at today. You successfully set up your first playdate.
That I did. Thanks, I said. I'll pick her up from your place as soon as I'm done.
Sounds great. Of course you're forgetting something.
What's that?
You're going to need my address, aren't you? And my phone number?
She reached for her phone.
Give me your number and I'll text you the info.
I gave it to her just as the kids reached the table. Hi, Mom. We're done, Bodie announced.
Did you have fun?
We climbed to the top.
I saw that. You're a great climber. And guess what? London is coming over on Monday to meet Noodle.
Both of their faces lit up.
Really? Thanks, Mom. Can she bring Mr. and Mrs. Sprinkles?
When Emily looked to me, I raised my hands. It's your call, but they have a travel cage.
Why not? Emily answered. I'm sure Noodle will just love that.
I laughed before we said our goodbyes, and as London and I began walking to the car, I felt a twinge of unease at the thought that I'd had lunch with Emily, something I hadn't done with Vivian in a long time, and that the conversation had seemed anything but forced. But I was probably making too much of it, wasn't I?
Chapter 11. And Then There Was One. Emily had told me that guilt was a wasted emotion.
but I'm not so sure about that. I understood the point she was making, that it does nothing to change the past, but guilt was a tool my mom used effectively as she raised Marge and me.
"Clean your plate, there are starving people in the world," was a common expression,
especially when Mom served up leftover surprise, which was an accurate description of the dish. Whatever was left over in the fridge at the end of the week was either tossed together in a stew or covered with lasagna noodles, and Marge and I would wonder how teriyaki beef and fettuccine chicken could possibly be paired in a way that didn't make us gag. Some other common ones.
"If you really cared about this family, you'd take out the garbage. And maybe one day you'll love your mom enough to sweep the back porch."
All had the effect of making my shoulders cave in and wonder how I could be such an awful child. My mom felt no guilt whatsoever about using guilt as a tool to control us, and sometimes I wish I could be more like that. I wish I could simply forgive myself and move on, but then again, if I really wanted to change, why didn't I? Once, when London was still a young toddler, I brought her to a trail just off the park. We didn't walk long or far, but at the halfway point I could tell she was getting tired, and I pointed out a stump where she could rest. Seconds later I heard her cry out, and then all at once she was screaming wildly in obvious pain. I scooped her into my arms in a mad panic, trying to figure out what on earth was happening when I spotted a few ants on her leg. But they weren't simply ants. They were fire ants, ants with both jaws and stingers and wildly aggressive. They swarm, biting and stinging, leaving welts. And while I swatted at the ants, even more kept appearing. They were in her clothes, in her socks, even in her shoes. In that instant, I put her down and started ripping the clothes from her body as fast as I could, even her diaper. I swatted and brushed, getting stung countless times in the process, and rushed my screaming child as fast as I could to the car. I didn't know what to do. This, like so many things, was Vivian's area of expertise, and I drove like a wild man for the 5 minutes it took me to reach home. I carried London into the house, and Vivian took over immediately, her tone sharp with me, but soft with London. She brought London into the bathroom and applied rubbing alcohol to the already swelling stings, gave her an antihistamine, and started applying cold washcloths to the affected area. Perhaps it was the efficiency and confidence she showed that finally ended London's hysterics. Meanwhile, I felt like a passerby on a city street in the aftermath of a horrible accident, amazed that Vivian had known exactly what to do. In the end, there was no long-term damage. I went back to the park and disposed of London's clothes in a trash bin, since the ants were still swarming over them. The swelling lingered for a day or two, but London was soon back to her normal self. She doesn't remember the event. I've asked her, and while that makes me feel better, I still experience guilt when I think back on that awful day. And guilt serves to teach me a lesson. I'm now cautious about where London sits whenever we're in the woods or in the park, and that's a good thing. She's never been swarmed by fire ants again. Guilt, in other words, isn't always wasted. It can keep us from making the same mistake twice. After lunch at Chick-fil-A with Emily, I spent the afternoon working. Wanting to get a sense of how much Taglieri was spending, I spoke to a friend in sales at the cable company. It turned out that Taglieri was paying premium rates and had too many poor slots. A bummer for him, but a godsend to me. After that, I touched base to the head of film crew I intended to use. We'd worked together in the past, and we went over the kinds of shots I wanted, as well as the projected cost. All that information was jotted on a pad of paper for easy retrieval when I needed to add it to the presentation. After that, I continued to perfect the scripts and tweaked a few more of the generic images I'd pulled together. By that point, my outline for two of the commercials was nearly complete. I was in a good mood as date night approached, despite having to bring London to dance with the evil Miss Hamshaw. Vivian made it home at a reasonable hour, and after we got London to bed, we ate dinner by candlelight and ended up in the bedroom. And yet there was less magic than I hoped for. It wasn't until Vivian started on her third glass of wine that she began to relax, and while I know that the honeymoon period of any marriage eventually comes to an end, I suppose that I'd always believed that it would be replaced by something deeper. A two of us against the universe bond, or even genuine mutual appreciation. For whatever reason, maybe because I sensed a continuing distance between us, the night ended with me feeling vaguely disappointed. On Saturday morning, Vivian took advantage of her me time before spending time with London the rest of the day. It gave me the quiet time I needed to focus on other areas of the presentation. An updated website, internet advertising, billboards and sporadic periods of radio advertising. I added in projected costs for everything over the course of a year, including vendors' fees and my own, along with a slide showing Taglieri's projected savings. I worked on Sunday as well, finishing up on Sunday afternoon, and wanted to go through it with Vivian. But for whatever reason, she seemed to be in no mood to listen or even talk to me, and the rest of the evening unfolded in the same stilted way that seemed to be becoming our norm. While I understood that our lives had recently veered in directions neither of us could have anticipated, I found myself wondering not whether Vivian still loved me, but whether she even liked me at all. On Monday morning, before London woke, I wandered into the master bathroom while Vivian was applying mascara. "Do you have a minute?"
"Sure, what's up?"
"Are you upset with me? You seemed irritated last night."
"Really? You want to do this now?"
"I know it's probably not a good time."
"No, it's not a good time. I have to leave for work in 15 minutes. Why do you always do this?"
"Do what?"
"Try to make me the bad guy."
"I'm not trying to make you the bad guy. After I finished the presentation, you barely spoke to me." Her eyes flashed.
"You mean because you pretty much ignored me in London all weekend?"
"I wasn't ignoring you. I was working."
"Don't make excuses. You could have taken a break here and there, but instead you did what you wanted to do, just like always."
"I'm just trying to say that it seems like you've been angry with me for a while now. You barely spoke to me on Thursday night either."
"Oh, for God's sake. I was tired. Don't try to make me feel bad for it. Have you completely forgotten about date night? Even though I was tired on Friday night too, I got all dressed up and we had sex because I knew you wanted it. I'm tired of feeling like I never do enough."
"Vivian,
why do you always have to take things so personally?"
she demanded, cutting me off.
"Why can't you just be happy with me? It's not like you're perfect either, but you don't see me coming in and complaining about the fact that you can't even support your family anymore."
Her words made me flinch. What did she think I'd been trying to do all weekend? But she didn't want an answer. Instead, she walked past me without a word, grabbed her workout bag, and stormed from the house, the front door slamming behind her. The sound must have awakened London, because she came down the stairs a couple of minutes later and found me sitting at the kitchen table. She was still in her pajamas, her hair puffing out on the side.
"Were you and Mommy fighting?"
"We were just talking," I said. I hadn't yet recovered from Vivian's outburst and felt sick to my stomach. "I'm sorry if the door was too loud." She rubbed her nose and looked around. Even groggy, I thought she was the most beautiful little girl in the world.
"Where is she?"
she finally asked. "She had to go to work, sweetie."
"Oh,"
she said.
"Do I have tennis this morning?"
"Yes," I said. "An art class with Bodie. We have to remember to bring your hamsters."
"Okay,"
she said. "How about a hug, baby girl?" She came over and wrapped her arms around me, giving me a squeeze.
"Daddy?"
"Yes?"
"Can I have Lucky Charms?"
I held my daughter close, thinking how much I'd needed a hug. "Of course you can." Taglieri wasn't in the bleachers that morning. In his place, I saw a woman I presumed was ex number 3 because she walked past me with Taglieri's daughter. I'm not sure what I expected. Bleached blonde hair, maybe, but she seemed to blend in well with the other mothers. I brought my computer with the intention of rehearsing my presentation, but I found it hard to concentrate. My mind kept circling back to the cutting words Vivian had spoken, and while I may have worked all weekend, her reaction to it struck me as out of proportion and completely unfair. I wished again that I could make her happy, but I wasn't, and her expression as I'd stood before her made that clear. It wasn't simply her anger at me that I'd witnessed, after all. I'd also seen and heard her contempt.
"Are you okay?"
Emily asked. I'd walked into the art studio, and London made a beeline toward Bodie, holding Mr. and Mrs. Sprinkles in their carry cage. As I watched her, Emily must have seen something in my expression, but I didn't want to tell her about Vivian and me. It seemed wrong somehow. "I'm okay. It was kind of a rough morning."
"I can tell," she said. "How can we turn that frown upside down?"
"I have no idea," I answered. $1 million might help."
"Can't do that," she said. "But how about a Tic Tac? I think I have some in my purse."
Despite my mood, I cracked a grin. "I'll pass, but thanks."
We're still on for today, right? Bodhi's been talking about it since he woke up.
Yeah, we're on.
Are you ready for your presentation?
I hope so, I said. I shifted the laptop from one hand to another, thinking it felt strangely heavy. Actually, I'm more nervous than I thought I would be. Taglieri would be my first client, and I haven't had a chance to even rehearse my pitch yet. When I was at Peter's, there was always someone around who'd listen.
Would it help if you ran through it with me? I know I'm not in advertising, but I'd be happy to lend an ear.
I can't ask you to do that.
You didn't. I'm volunteering. I have some free time, and besides, I've never heard an advertising pitch before. It'll be a new experience for me.
Though I knew she was offering to be nice, I felt the need to go over it, if only so I wouldn't continue to replay the argument.
Thanks, I said. I'll owe you. You already owe me. Play date, remember? Not that I'm keeping score.
Of course not. We strolled to the coffee shop, got our drinks, and sat at a table. First, I walked Emily through a few slides on the PowerPoint that spoke to the power of advertising. Another few slides showing breakdowns of advertising dollars in the legal world, and still more that profiled a few other legal firms in Charlotte and their estimated revenues. From there, the presentation emphasized the power of using a broader advertising strategy across multiple platforms to increase awareness and a mock-up of the kind of user-friendly and up-to-date website that would be far more effective. I then showed a sampling of various legal commercials, along with Taglieri's, emphasizing the lack of differentiation. Finally, I went over the slides that showed how I could not only create an overall advertising campaign and film three commercials, but also save him money. She pointed to the computer.
Do you always do this much work beforehand?
No, I said, but I think this is the only shot I'll have with this guy.
I'd hire you.
You haven't seen the commercials yet.
You seem more than competent already, but okay, show me.
I took a deep breath and showed her the outline for the two commercials I'd be pitching, the first somewhat similar to what he was already doing. My idea was to open with two photographs of auto accidents, a photo of a construction site and another of a warehouse. Off screen, Taglieri is speaking. If you've been injured in an accident or on the job, you need help from an expert. Taglieri appears next, walking slowly in front of the courthouse, wearing a cardigan and addressing the camera. My name is Joey Taglieri, and my specialty is helping people who are injured. It's what I do best, and I'm on your side. Consultations are free, and there's no cost until I get you the money that you deserve. I've won millions of dollars from my clients, and now I want to help you get your life back. Let me fight for you. Call. There was a toll-free number followed by INJURED. And Emily furrowed her brow.
I like that he's outside and not in an office, she offered.
It makes him more approachable, don't you think? I also wanted to make sure the phone number was memorable.
And you said you have a second commercial?
I nodded. This one has a different feel, I offered. It opened with everyday images of Charlotte, both places and people, while Taglieri spoke off camera in a calm voice. Welcome to another day in the Queen City. Tourists come to experience the sights and sounds and smells, but our best attractions aren't our barbecue, or our racetrack, or our sports teams, or our lakes and trails, or our skyline. It's our people, our community, our friends and families and co-workers and neighbors who make this place feel like home. And when one of them is injured on the job, a stranger at an insurance company, maybe someone who can't even find Charlotte on the map, will do everything he or she can to deny coverage, even if lives are ruined in the process. To me, that's just plain wrong. From there, the camera shifts to Taglieri, wearing a shirt and tie, but no jacket. I'm Joey Taglieri, and if you've been injured and need some help, give me a call. After all, we're neighbors. I'm on your side, and we're in this together. When it was finished, I tapped the keyboard, shutting down the screen. What do you think?
Very folksy.
Too folksy?
Not at all, she said. And it's definitely original.
Is that good or bad?
He'll be blown away.
I just don't want to waste his time. He hates when people waste his time.
He told you that?
Yes. At least he's honest.
I like that.
Walking into the law offices of Joey Taglieri, my nerves were still jangling and I had to force my hands not to shake. I'd just finished running through most of the presentation and the first of the commercials. I held the second commercial and financials in reserve. And when I finished, I waited for Joey to say something. Anything. Instead, he continued to stare at the final image.